Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 12:33 p.m. That is New York time. I'm based out of Cancun and I'm flying back today, so I'm recording the audio now rather than potentially quite a bit later. So the big thing that's been happening in here today has been that there's been wider dollar weakness, and the dollar index is now back in the region of the trend mean. So this is the do or die moment. Now there has been a very clear argument made by a significant number of Wall Street analysts over the course of the last few months that the dollar should be declining, and it has held up rather well against a background where there have been very clear calls for why the dollar should be underperforming. Well, we're starting to see some of the reasons for why that should start to be manifesting in a slightly more dollar bearish environment now, because US growth is starting to slow down. That's perhaps not so surprising considering the bump that it got from the fiscal stimulus last year. Well, that is at least going to be part of the fact behind any kind of dollar weakness. Then, of course, you've had the significant sell-off that's been evident on Wall Street, and that has resulted in the outperformance of Wall Street relative to emerging markets in Europe in particular starting to ebb. So people are starting to look around for where they might find some opportunities. Well, therefore, it's probably worth looking at where do we see relative strength. So it's quite clear where the relative strength resides. If we look at, for example, the Eurozone, then you'd be hard pushed to really say that it's Europe is going to be the place where a lot of growth starts to come out of. But when we look at the euro over the course of the last 8 weeks, then it does have this very clear base formation. There has been a clear loss of downside momentum over the course of the last 6 months. If it can sustain a move back above the trend mean, well, then we're really in a clear dollar bearish environment. So that would be something that we haven't seen in at least the last 8 or 9 months, to be sure. Well, now the next thing is when we look at the emerging markets, that's where we see a significant number of currencies breaking above their respective trend means already. So that's where we can see clear evidence of leadership. The MSCI Emerging Markets Currency Index is back above the trend mean, if only just in here today. Well, also we can see clearly that it bottomed quite a bit ago. The low that we saw back in September, that's where we've had a sequence of higher reaction lows since then. But it's much easier to make a case for emerging market currency strength. They're looking at the dollar with one eye, but they're also looking at the renminbi. And the Chinese renminbi was a bit stronger in here today. Now, China doesn't particularly want a strong currency, but neither do they want a currency that is accelerating lower. But the very fact that the renminbi has been relatively steady and the dollar is starting to weaken, well, that is acting as a tailwind now for some of the, excuse me, the better managed emerging markets. So, for example, the Indonesian rupiah has now cleared the region of the trend mean. That's a failed downside break, if we were to look at it the other way around. So, if we do look at it the other way around, then what? And I really should do. I should have typed it the other way around. Excuse me. Well, what we're presented with is a clear failed downside break below the low that we saw in 2015. It's now back above the trend mean. So this is the first time it's spent any time above the trend mean since the end of 2017. And since this is 2 weeks above it, then the last time you have to go back to 2016 before you see a rally above the trend mean for the rupiah. Well, that does help to really ram home the point that the Jakarta Composite is above the trend mean, and it has been exhibiting very clear outperformance over the course of the last few months against a background where there has been very clear downward trajectories in a significant number of developed markets. Well, we have a new administration in Brazil, and that is contributing to some at least steadiness in the real. Well, it looks like that the low that we saw back in the middle of last year is going to hold. Now we have a higher reaction low. It's right in the region of the trend mean. It's starting to test it again. There is the potential here that the real is going to get a boost from Bolsonaro, that if they can make any inroads at all in trying to tackle the corruption in Brazil, then the markets are likely to reward that kind of behavior. And the Bovespa index is just about the only major stock market in the world that is at new all-time highs. That really does, I think, start to set off some signals right around the world that there are emerging markets that are doing better in here. And then, of course, we have India. Well, India has a new central banker, and as a political animal, he's obviously going to want to hold on to his job and follow through on what the BJP want, which is to win the next election. And it looks likely that Modi is going to try and buy that election. So there is the potential that India is going to lead in terms of fiscal stimulus and potentially even monetary stimulus if they do follow through and start to cut interest rates. Well, that should be positive for the Nifty index, and it has been exhibiting clear outperformance relative to developed markets over the course of the last few months. But I think it is also important here that we need to think about what exactly is going on in China, because the emerging markets ETF, which is based on the MSCI indices, is extremely heavily weighted by Chinese shares, and Chinese shares are still trending downwards. Now, the emerging markets index has just about put in a higher reaction low. It might be a little bit early to call it that just yet, but it has certainly steadied. But when we look at the A share index of mainland shares in Shanghai, well, we have seen additional upside in here today, but not in a particularly dynamic manner. We had the upside key reversal on Friday. That followed the upside key that we had in October from around the same level. It has at least held that advance. There has, but the, I guess, the clear consistency that we've had over the course of the last 12 months has been a series of multi-month ranges, one below another. And this is simply the latest one of those. And until that sequence is broken, well, then I think it would be very rash to conclude that the downtrend in Chinese shares has ended. Simple fact of the matter is that the Chinese are weighing on the shadow banking sector. They're withdrawing sources of credit from various facets of the economy. They learned the lesson from the massive stimulus that they introduced after the credit crisis, in that it created even bigger imbalances, and now they are weighing what to do about the contracting economy, because bull markets thrive on liquidity, and when you're withdrawing liquidity, well then that leads to contractions. And we're seeing evidence of that in China right now. That's why you have an economy that is slowing, is why you have a stock market that is underperforming. Then they're trying to reform the financial sector. They're trying to introduce defaults, but that's impairing the ability of banks to lend. So banks are also a little bit leery of increasing liquidity in the market. So these are, I think, rather important characteristics. But more importantly, from the perspective of an emerging markets investor, the headwind that we get from Chinese shares and the underperformance of China's tech sector is one of the more important weighing factors on the global emerging market sector. Now, Tencent is still the biggest share in the emerging markets index, and it has at least held its bounce. but it needs to do more than that. We really need to see it push up and out of this range. If it can do that, well, then at least we can begin to conclude that we're in a trending environment. The one good thing that has happened for Tencent is that they have started to introduce new games into the Chinese market. None of them were for Tencent's company, but with new games being permitted, then there's the potential that they're going to allow some of Tencent's access to the market as well. So there is the potential that things could get better, and there is certainly a value proposition considering just how much it has pulled back. The PE is still at 33 on a forward basis, but the share was trading at a high in the region of 475, and the low was at 254. So it has had a very meaningful pullback. But generally speaking, when we see something like this, that you get a very lengthy period of support building before a breakout to new all-time highs can be sustained. Well, when we look at what's going on in Europe, then there are two big issues. The first is that there are a number of European economies that are flirting with recession, and then, of course, you have the Brexit vote, which could be as early as next week. Well, if when we look at the euro and the pound, it's right at the region of the lower side of this range that's been evolving now for the better part of 3 years. And I continue to think that the most likely scenario is that they're going to pass a deal, or that there's potentially going to be another referendum. It is just too much to hope for that I guess when we think about it very clearly, that you can't expect the people who voted against a deal or voted against Brexit in the first place to negotiate Brexit. That is simply that is almost like asking the fox to look after the hen house. What that suggests is that we're going to get a fudge, and it's really just a question of the magnitude of the fudge that we're going to get. But I think the most likely scenario is that either the UK is going to remain within the EU, or it's going to be outside the EU and be a member in all but name. And unfortunately, I think that is not at all what people thought they were voting for. Well, generally speaking, the markets tend to rally when it looks increasingly likely that the UK will be closer to the EU, and the pound is right at the lower side of its range against the euro. So this is about where we can anticipate some support starting to come back in. Well, with less demand coming through for safe haven assets, and with an increasing possibility that we are going to have a Powell put, there's even an alliteration to it. It's certainly better than a Powell call. Well, we also have to put the volatility that we've had over the last year in the context of markets that generally tend to test new central bankers. And we had the pullback in January, and that wasn't enough to really change the mind of the Fed, and he'd really only just taken his position. So he was tested again at the end of 2018, and now we're starting to see more dovish comments coming out of the Fed. Well, that is beginning to allay fears among investors that there won't be a Powell put. So I think it's very likely that the Federal Reserve is going to ride to the rescue whenever they see the need. And they are beginning to see the need, considering how quickly the market had been pulling back. Well, with more dovish commentary, we're seeing a rally in stocks, we're seeing a rally in the oil price, and this move that we've had in oil now is larger than any rally we've seen since the beginning of October. So what that is beginning to suggest is that a low has been found, that Saudi Arabia is at least taking some of its supply out of the market, that drilling activity should naturally start to moderate in the USA when prices are this low. So that's another consideration. But if we see dollar weakness, then that should be more positive for just about all commodities. And gold prices, which had been rallying modestly in dollar terms, were in positive territory so far in here today. Now, they are probably going to have at least some consolidation, considering that people were buying them on a safe haven basis. So that's more probably an issue for gold denominated in the emerging markets than it is for the dollar, because there is the realistic possibility that gold can hold this move above $1,250, and that the strength of the dollar over the course of the last few months has been one of the inhibiting factors in its ability to rally further. Well, when we look at some of the other commodities, sugar prices were up in a reasonably dynamic manner in here today, and they're really quite depressed. It's now testing the region of the trend mean. Upside follow-through tomorrow would begin to really suggest that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And I think these are some of the more important points that when we look at, for example, corn prices, they've been really quite depressed. And that's been at least in part because of the trade war. It's been even obviously the trade war has been an even bigger influence on soybeans. But generally speaking, when you get ranges like this that last for multiple years, then when you do get a breakout, it can be really very powerful. And the last time we saw something like that was in 2010. So rather than ignore the agricultural prices, I think that now is the time to be paying particular attention to them for the simple reason that, generally speaking, when prices have been going sideways at re relatively depressed levels for a prolonged period, it inhibits supply growth and herds decline, less acreage gets planted, and then when demand starts to return again, there is an inability to supply, so prices rise until you get new scheduling and new crops coming through. So I think that is one of the things that is potentially going to offer a surprise in 2019. Now, when we look at what's been going on Wall Street so far today, well, the S&P 500 is following through on the upside from the move that we had on Friday. Now, the first area of potential resistance is the lower side of that overhead trading range around 2,600 points. So that's about 39 points from here. Then you have the region of the trend mean, and certainly there is an oversold condition still evident relative to the trend mean. Well, that's 134 points from where we are today, and if we can start to see, I think most particularly what we need to see is a higher reaction low that holds, and we aren't there quite yet. So if we think about the short term, then we have the potential for an additional short covering rally. If we think about the medium term, well, we have an overhead top formation. It's looking or a completed top formation. So we're going to have to see higher reaction lows and then a sustained move above the trend mean to confirm a return to demand dominance. Well, if we think about the what we one of the inhibiting factors or one of the things that is almost a necessary condition for optimism to really be rational about the stock market is high yield spreads starting to come back down again. Well, they moved down in a pretty dynamic manner on Friday, so that is quite important. And when we look at, for example, and unfortunately that index is only updated on with a 24-hour lag, but we can see, for example, that there is additional demand coming through for high yield bonds in here today. So they are quite quickly now unwinding this oversold condition relative to the trend mean. And what that suggests is that there is the potential for this rally to have some legs. If high yield spreads continue to contract, then that is going to be rep well, that is clearly representative of bullish appetite. So that is something that is one of the more important factors. And then when we look at I think one of the more important points is that the number of shares trading below the trend mean has been equivalent to what we saw in 2011, and the only time it's been surmounted in the last 30 odd years was in 2008. So this has been a meaningful correction, and there are a significant number of shares that are exhibiting short-term oversold conditions. So there is certainly the potential for a bounce, and potentially also that this is a medium-term low. And if high-yield spreads continue to contract, then we'll have greater confidence in calling it that medium-term low. So this is a rather important point here in terms of the medium-term outlook. Well, then we have to think about the longer-term outlook. Eventually, we are going to have a recession, and the high-yield spreads are certainly one measure of liquidity. Well, the other, of course, is the yield curve, and the yield curve was a little bit tighter in here today, around 16 basis points. Well, when that eventually does become inverted, and it does appear to be only a matter of time before it does in fact become inverted, well, then we have a lead indicator of anything from 6 to 18 months out for the next U.S. recession. And it could be ranging for a while, but when it does become inverted, well, then we have to conclude that we're coming towards the next recession. And that's likely to provide a really attractive buying opportunity for the longer-term investor, for the simple reason that there are three very important bullish characteristics, which are the rise of the global population, and the rise of the global consumer because of improving governance, the secular bear market that we have in oil prices, which and in energy generally. Certainly, there is the potential for oil prices to rally from where they are right now, but they're unlikely to trend higher on successive years, which would be what we saw during the secular bull market. And then you have the technological innovation. Well, what we've certainly seen over the weekend and at the end of last week was greater demand for immuno-oncology and cancer treatments, and the Nasdaq Biotech Index is rallying rather impressively from rather deep oversold conditions in here right now. It was not nearly as overextended as we saw, for example, with the semiconductors index, and I think that this is where there's real value in the technology sector right now, and not least because a number of these immuno-oncology treatments are reaching commercialization. That's why you have Eli Lilly and Bristol Myers Squibb making significant acquisitions over the last 3 or 4 days. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.